A Donnelly-led banking bill clears the Senate. DACA protests in Indy lead to arrests. That, plus a fee to sign bill, goes to the governor. And more on Indiana Week in Review for the week ending March 9th, 2018.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.
This week, the U.S. Senate advanced legislation to roll back banking regulations passed in the wake of the 2008 financial collapse.
And voted on.
Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly trumpeted the passage of a bill he says he helped craft and introduce.
This common sense legislation is intended to help Main Street community banks and local credit unions to focus more on traditional banking, our small businesses, our farms, our families, while maintaining the safety and soundness of our financial system.
The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office says the bill increases the chances of another 2008-style collapse of the financial system.
Is this a good move from Donnelly? It's the first question for our Indiana Week in Review panel. Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwanis, the host of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Katzenberger. I'm Indiana Public Broadcasting Statehouse reporter Brandon Smith. Ann Delaney, is rolling back banking regulations what voters want?
I'm not sure voters pay an awful lot of attention to this issue, but I think from the perspective of rural Indiana, for example, small financial institutions have been burdened a fair amount by these regulations, which are designed to make certain that there's enough money on hand in the large banks that are, quote, too big to fail, that we don't have a repetition of 2008. And where that line is drawn is always a judgment call. But we want to make sure that there's competition and that there are institutions in rural Indiana that can lend to farmers and to businessmen and entrepreneurs and businesswomen and make sure that there's money available in areas where the big banks don't want to compete. So I think it's all a judgment call, and I'm sure that Senator Donnelly will look carefully at where that line is to make sure that the financial institutions that are too big to fail are not affected by this.
This is, I would think, the sort of vote that Donnelly will trumpet when he says, "Well, I
don't,
you know, sometimes
use the word trumpet, please."
No,
please.
It's the first half of it.
Yeah,
you're a little sensitive.
It's the sort of thing he'll talk a lot about when talking about those votes that maybe don't fall so much on the Democratic side of things. It's going to be hard to argue with that on this one.
Well, yeah, I mean, the rest of his party is kind of freaking out about this bill.
There are other Democrats. I'll take
the.
There are, but almost entirely from the Democrats who are up this year in seats that are in states
are at risk.
Trump won.
So what a coincidence then that the bill he authored 8 years ago, he's now trying to unwind that put all that strain on community, or not the author that he claims that he helped write and voted for 8 years ago. You know, I'm sure that's not a coincidence that now he's seen the light and wants to help these community banks that have been burdened by the provisions of Dodd-Frank in recent years. Liberal Democrats are complaining, this is just a bailout for big banks again, here we go again. If you look at Dodd-Frank, if you look at Obamacare, these bills have burdened small institutions, small insurers, in the case of Obamacare, and they really became central planning models for huge banks and huge insurance companies, and that's how we've seen the market react. So, you know, credit where credit's due. Senator Donnelly's doing the right thing here and moving the dial the other direction. I hope we do the same thing in Obamacare soon.
I wouldn't count
cover
so much
more
on
people?
That one.
That would be great. If we
is this
more
just
people.
Another one of those Donnelly votes where he gets to say, look, I'm a moderate Democrat?
You know, maybe some of that, but I think it's more an issue of how does a given law affect my state. And by that I mean, you look at the community banks that service large portions of the more rural aspect of Indiana, and those are the smaller banks that were having trouble. So in his mind, I mean, I would guess the way he frames this is it hurts Hoosier institutions and their customers. And as a parallel, you just talked about Obamacare and the Affordable Care Act. If memory serves, even though there were elements of that, certainly, that Joe Donnelly championed, he always was concerned about a component that dealt with taxation on the manufacturers of medical devices, which hurt people in Warsaw, Indiana, and other places, which certainly have been something of a mecca for the manufacturing.
Right.
So he was opposed to that element, too. So you could frame this, and I think it would be legitimate framing to say, philosophical aspects here, and we can have talk about the who's R, who's D, or what is harmful to Hoosiers in every sense, at the most basic sense.
John Katzenberger, do you take the politically craven view that this was a vote that Joe Donnelly had to take?
The one that you're advocating, obviously.
I'm just asking a question.
I'm
just asking a question. Would you take the political craven view that he had to make this vote, or is it he's looking at the state he represents?
Well, as a fish in the stream with a minnow in front of me, I guess I'll take the bait. I do think that that there is reason for concern. I think Senator Donnelly is continuing to make calculated votes. I think that he's done a good job of navigating those waters, if you will. But I think that if you look at the Congressional Budget Office estimates and the report from the CBO, there's real concern that we could have a situation where the big banks, who are also getting relief from this extraneously, could find themselves in the same kind of a situation. Now, to the extent that we don't have a roll-up of smaller banks, then this is a good thing. But I'm not sure that's going to be the case.
All right. Well, time now for viewer feedback. Each week we post an unscientific online poll question in conjunction with our Ice Miller email and text alerts. This week's question, will Senator Joe Donnelly's support for a bill that rolls back regulations on mid-sized banks help him at the polls? A, it'll help him. B, it'll hurt him. C, it probably won't make a difference. Last week's question, are Republican leaders avoiding debate on gun regulations or just trying to, as Senator David Long put it, manage the process? 69% say they're avoiding debate, while 6% say they're managing the process. 15% say both, 10 say neither. If you would like to take part in that poll, go to wfyi.org/IWIR and look for the poll. Well, immigration activists took to the streets of Indianapolis this week to protest Senators Joe Donnelly and Todd Young over a federal immigration program known as DACA.
The protest coincided with DACA's March 5th expiration date, though recent court action has extended that deadline. Protests, which began outside Democratic Senator Joe Donnelly's Indianapolis office, spilled into the streets, where police arrested more than a dozen people for illegally blocking traffic. The activists' anger towards Donnelly and Republican Todd Young stemmed from their votes for an immigration reform package last month that would have cut off family reunification and directed funds towards building a wall on the border with Mexico.
Mike O'Brien, do protests like these, where they're blocking traffic, and this is intentional, do they do more harm than good when it comes to public opinion?
The whole point, they believe it helps them, because the whole point of this exercise was to get a headline that said they were all arrested over DACA and just link those two things. If had they walked to the other end of Ohio Street, they could have participated in a debate that day, literally, on a Republican-led effort to make sure that DACA recipients can get professional licenses through the Indiana Professional Licensing Agency for nurses and accountants and people like this. So I don't know. I don't think this wasn't a productive protest, and it just so happened to coincide at the same time that Indiana was moving the needle in the right direction for DACA recipients.
Is this the sort of protest that's productive or not?
Oh, I think it is, because it calls attention to the issue. Now, Joe Donnelly supports the Dreamers, in sharp contrast to Rokita, Messer, or Braun, all of whom want to export them all. We've got 9,000 Dreamers in the state of Indiana who are contributing $500 million to the economy, and they want to throw them out. Joe Donnelly wants to protect them. I think that anything that we can do, or any citizen can do, to call attention to the fact that Donald Trump and the Republican-led Congress is not protecting those individuals, it should happen.
They were protesting both Donnelly and Young for the votes they took on one of the proposals in that Votorama we talked about in this show, the one that the president supported. Donnelly voted for all of the proposals, some of which DACA activists wanted. Mm-hmm. Is this painting too broad a brush? Are these protesters painting too broad a brush and protesting both these guys?
Well, it's interesting because there is this split in the Democrat Party between far left or more left progressives and more moderate Democrats. And I think this might be a small indication of that. They want to give Senator Donnelly a lot of grief for one vote out of many when in general he's with them on the issue. So I think there's some danger in that. I think Mike's assertion that this was meant to generate a headline, and they got the headline they wanted because of the linking of the protests and the arrests, and I think that's really the bottom of that at this point.
Is that good? I mean, it definitely got them the headline. We're talking about it here on the show. Is that good enough for them?
Well, I mean, protests aren't supposed to be convenient. If you get a permit, you say, hey, there's an empty industrial parking lot by the old airport facility. Go there. You can knock yourself out, make as much noise as you want, and march around for 12 hours. That's convenient. Doesn't interrupt traffic, but it really isn't a protest then.
It doesn't get any attention.
It doesn't get any attention. Right. And so in terms of if in fact you want to have a protest, forget what the topic is. You want to get attention. You want to get people talking. You want to create a buzz. And so it shows some degree of civil disobedience, I guess, to a certain extent. So that part, I guess, they got right. But then there's the bigger challenge about it's not as if you look at the race in the Senate race, if they don't like these two, where are they going to turn? There's not exactly a left-wing option, progressive option in terms of this election.
Joe Donnelly's been with the Dreamers. The only reason that other vote was there was to keep the process moving and get it to conference committee. Right. And anybody who looks at his record knows that he supports the Dreamers.
All right. Well, the Indiana Senate sent legislation to the governor this week to allow prosecutors to seek a murder charge against someone who attacks a woman and causes the death of her fetus.
Current law allows such charges if the fetus is viable. The legislation eliminates the need for viability. And that change in law has some anti-abortion groups cheering. They argue the measure gives legal standing to unborn fetuses that hasn't existed before, which could be used to better defend anti-abortion laws. Republican Senator Aaron Freeman notes his bill is explicit about what it does and doesn't do.
This bill has nothing to do with two things. One is a woman's legal right to an abortion, and two, it does not have anything to do with a woman who would terminate her own pregnancy.
John Katzenberger, is this a backdoor way for anti-abortion groups to make grounds on their cause?
I think it could be. It opens the door for that possibility for somebody who's creative in a legal sense. I think Senator Freeman's absolutely right in his argument, but now that that is in the, well, assuming it's fully enacted, I would expect that there will be a case before too long from an enterprising attorney who can link that language and bring it forward. And make that very point that people who are in favor of abortion are concerned about.
Is this the foot in the door that groups like Indiana Right to Life have been looking for?
I think they're opening a lot of doors to try to find some path that leads to advancing the ball as they see it. And again, I'm no attorney, never been accused, and I'm getting a nod. First time Ann's nodded is something I've said for a long time. But if
we
look at this decision that came down from Tanya Walton Pratt, the U.S. District Court judge that nullified portions of several abortion statutes in the state of Indiana, there is a reference in her decision that says specifically that despite, you know, a broad search for references to or indications that the state of Indiana through its General Assembly, its elected officials, has recognized unviable fetuses as individuals worthy of protection, that search turned up nothing. Well, if this were enacted, presumably there is something in the code that would suggest that. Now, whether that's grounds for viewing this through a different prism, I don't know. But I guess that's why we have litigation and court decisions.
So you have the author of the bill, Aaron Freeman, certainly an anti-abortion advocate himself, who nonetheless says, look, the bill makes it very clear. This has nothing to do with legal abortions. Does that undercut what the anti-abortion activists are hoping for here?
Yeah, I hope it does. The bottom line in this is if a woman is assaulted and her fetus and her baby is killed in that process, and now if they say, well, the baby wasn't viable, now that guy's just off the hook, right?
Mostly.
Or is just a lesser charge.
It's a much lesser charge.
Yeah. So the bottom line for me is that this now just evenly applies to a pregnant woman. If the fetus is killed, then the charges are going to be consistent, and you're not getting a lesser charge because it's 10 weeks instead of 25. And I don't think the defendant in this case would be taking into account how pregnant the woman was or making that a motivating factor or any of those things. So I don't I think there's a lot of noise here, and I'm not a lawyer either, so you know we can talk about what the legal pathway is going to look like here. But it's
well,
I think it's
well. Let's I was going to say let's turn to the lawyer.
Let's
on
go
the
to the
panel,
lawyer.
Then.
Who also happens to fundamentally disagree with me on the policy.
I hate to admit this, but I absolutely agree with you.
Wow, that's
yeah, I know
something.
It's shocking.
I'll rethink it after the show, given the topic.
I'm not sure that's a good idea.
Keep me up all night.
It can certainly exacerbate the penalty, and perhaps it should exacerbate the penalty. I mean, you've taken the child or the prospective child away from a family and away from the parents and everything else. So it seems to me that's a justification for aggravating factors. As far as affecting abortion rights, I think that's what was said on camera was exactly right. The federal government, the U.S. Supreme Court determines when a fetus is a person, not the Indiana General Assembly. And they've already determined that. So this is not going to have any effect on abortion rights.
All right. Well, Congressman Todd Rokita won't participate in a GOP primary debate organized by the nonpartisan Indiana Debate Commission.
The commission announced Friday the televised debate will take place April 30th between Congressman Luke Messer and former state representative Mike Braun. Rokita, the third person vying to challenge Democratic incumbent Joe Donnelly this fall, declined the invitation. Rokita is the first candidate to skip one of the commission's debates in its 10-year history. The commission says Rokita's campaign cited scheduling conflicts and said the Republican lawmaker will only participate in debates organized and moderated by conservative Republicans.
John Schwanis, is this a wise move by Rokita, considering the tone of his campaign?
Well, usually you don't want to debate if you think you're ahead, if you're the incumbent, and you think you have more to risk than you have to gain by participating. Having said that, you would like to think that people who are committed to the process and are engaged, and in fact we're talking about an incumbent member of the U.S. House of Representatives who one would presume values the notion of a robust debate on issues and positions. It's disappointing. I'm putting on now my good government civics hat, taking off the political calculation hat, and say it is sad when people don't participate in debates. We have so few. It really deprives individuals and voters of an opportunity to size these candidates up in a way that you can't necessarily size them up just by watching their television spots.
Oh, I think you can size Rokita up by watching his television spots.
This televised debate will be less than 2 weeks before the primary election. It'll include Luke Messer. It'll include Mike Braun. Will it be a bad look if Todd Rokita is not on that stage?
Oh, I think it will be for Representative Rokita. Sorry about that.
You ought to be.
you hope. I think that he's making a bad decision, and I think that it also has a potential to hurt the debate commission format and the groundwork which has been laid so carefully over so many years to ensure that there are debates in these higher level offices. And I think that's unfortunate because John's right. The more we have a chance to see these folks discussing issues, the better off we are, and he's not going to be there. I think it's a detriment to him and to Representative Rokita and his campaign, and it gives an advantage to the candidates who will be there.
This is the first time we've seen a candidate turn down the debate commission. Given that now someone has done it, will this be the last time somebody does that?
Oh, I think it will be. I mean, it's obviously a poor decision. He doesn't want to debate the issues. I mean, all he wants is red meat and dog whistles out there for people and the ads that he's run are so offensive. He probably doesn't want to stand up there and defend them in front of the camera when he gets to be asked questions and has to respond in more than the paid ads that he's putting on. It's frankly, his campaign has been disgraceful, but you know, he may be the Republican nominee, so he'll have a lot in common with the president.
Who won?
Who is the president?
And has been just an exemplary president since he's been in office.
This is in the GOP primary that he's turning down this nonpartisan debate commission. Do you think, if he is the nominee, do you think he can get away with that in the general election?
Maybe Donnelly will do it. Maybe Donnelly will say, I'm not debating you now since you didn't bother in the primary.
Only liberal leading organizations for Donnelly, right? I don't know what he does in the general. I mean, this is a hard decision to go back on. When I ran the governor's campaign, I appreciated the debate. I think the debates themselves, the commission debates, are kind of a niche audience.
But it's an important one because you go to schools, you go to an elementary school. Like for the governor's campaign, we went to an elementary school during the day. We were down in southern Indiana, you know, at an educational institution down there. So I think that's important because you're in front of these kids. And, you know, John, to your point about kind of the civics hat to put on and the importance of these things, it's more than the issues itself. It's kind of educating people on the process. And I don't think they're as widely viewed as I hope they be, or, you know, would expect them to be. A lot of times I think they get the most attention when someone, like, really screws up and then it's repeated in other formats, but the exercise is noteworthy, and I think all candidates ought to go through it.
Richard Murdoch's famous, I'll call it a gaffe, since it lost him the election, happened in one of these debate commission debates against Joe Donnelly. Is Todd Rokita just trying to avoid one of those moments?
Well, I think we live in a time where there is so much caution and people are reluctant to say anything, although, as I've said before, the rules don't apply anymore. If outrageous statements were a disqualifier now,
We'd be
dramatically Senator different.
Murdoch the rules,
but, I mean, the corollary here. One more word on behalf of civility and civic duty.
If there's no place for that.
I know. If
you
were, just say, if you were elected
senator,
senator actually has an obligation, takes an oath to represent all of the people in that district, not just the ones
only
who are card-carrying conservative Republicans.
Yes. Thank you very much. Republican U.S. Senate candidate Luke Messer unveiled his first TV ad of the campaign this week.
Messer's ad uses a personal family touch. It features his daughters talking about their father.
He's a conservative, a big advocate for President Trump's agenda.
You see him on TV, we hear it every day in the car on the way to school.
We gotta change the Senate, Ava. He lives his values every single day.
Family first, country always, faith forever.
The ad mirrors a theme Messer's used on the campaign trail. His stump speech is typically anecdotes about his family.
And Delaney, this represents, I think it's safe to say, a different tone than the one used by Messer's opponents so far, obviously Todd Rokita and Mike Braun. Is that a good thing here?
Well, it is a sharp contrast. I mean, Rokita's red meat and Braun's just exploiting of an unfortunate, tragic death are both reprehensible. This is just vapid. I just hope that nobody shows this at the rehearsal dinner for those two girls' weddings, because they'll be mortified by it, I'm sure.
High praise, apparently, from Andalou.
It's off for an Emmy.
Obviously, Todd Rokita's ad garnered a lot of attention, including on this show. We are talking about the Messer ad, but is this the sort of thing that'll get primary voters paying attention?
You want to contrast yourself, right? So if there is... I mean, we get feedback from Republicans that are upset about the tone of the campaign in general. I don't know how that motivates your decision making. I mean, the people complain about negative campaigning, but then they go base their vote on it largely at the end of the day. So it's a different approach. But these three guys are going to be the only ones on television for the next 2 months. You know, there's not going to be a lot. There's not very many state legislative primaries. There's none in really kind of high, big media market areas, and that's how they're going to run those campaigns. So this is kind of the ball game from a big media commercial standpoint. And so you're really just seeing these three. It's not like it's lost in a general election in a presidential year when it's just ad after ad after ad. You can kind of judge this race based on these ads.
To me, this felt a
what
little...
What does this tell you about the race with this ad?
It's going to be great. It's just awesome.
To me, this felt a little bit like one of those ads you run way ahead of the election just to start introducing yourself to the voters. He's the third one on the air in a three-person primary. Does this ad fall a little flat for you?
You can use
some could say. Some could say. I mean, it's refreshing. It draws a distinction, and I think the point. No one ad airs in a vacuum. It's part of a broader race. Yeah. So, if in fact you're trying to distinguish yourself and stand out, in this case, not by necessarily being the furthest to the right, but actually by having some more human qualities. And so here's there was a time, now this is going to sound quaint, but like I'm talking to my grandkids. There was a time...
You don't have grandkids.
No, that's right. Thank you, counselor. But I'm going to be talking to
this
them someday.
This feels like a bit of a throwback.
Let me just say, there was a time when we thought that even if the politician seeking your vote agreed with you on every issue, that there needed to be something more, that voters often responded to likability. You wanted to give your vote
right,
to somebody
so
you actually liked. And if, in fact, there's still some small portion of that in the news,
Does this feel more like a general election ad as opposed to a primary, this particular primary?
No, I think this is absolutely what we think it is, and that is to try to draw a sharp contrast to the opponents. He's done that Whether it's effective will be seen in May.
Finally, Congressman Luke Messer this week suggested that if talks with North Korea lead to concrete action, President Donald Trump should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. Mike O'Brien, thoughts?
He absolutely should be awarded the Nobel Peace Prize. If he accomplishes something that presidents for the last three decades have failed to, or longer, have failed to accomplish. We gave Barack Obama a Nobel Peace Prize in the first minute of his campaign for just kind of flying around and talking to people.
I'm guessing you feel a little differently, Andalini.
No, I mean, we all wish him well. Yeah, we don't want him to take us to the brink of nuclear war. And he may have success. They have a lot in common. They both have bad hairstyles. Neither one of them seems to exercise, and they're kind of pudgy. They want to punish their enemies. They fly off the handle all the time, and they like military parades. They have a lot they can discuss.
Was it Alfred Nobel? How deeply is he buried? Because when he starts spinning in his grave, I don't want to be near that.
He's not from one of those blank hole countries, so it's okay.
Let me ask this question.
He doesn't need the money. I mean, there's all kinds of upsides here.
The GOP primary so far has been the two of... what can Todd Rokita do to out-Trump Luke Messer on this one? Is there anything that can be done?
King for life, maybe.
Shoot his opponents.
That's Indiana Week in Review for this week. Our panel is Democrat Ann Delaney, Republican Mike O'Brien, John Schwannis of Indiana Lawmakers, and political analyst John Ketzenberger. If you'd like a podcast of this program, you can find it at WFYI.org/IWIR. Or starting Monday, you can stream it or get it on demand from Xfinity and on the new WFYI app. I'm Brandon Smith of Indiana Public Broadcasting. Join us next time, because a lot can happen in an Indiana week.
Ice Miller is proud to support Indiana Week in Review. Ice Miller, with a 100-year tradition of learning what is important to clients and strategizing with them toward a common goal. Today, Ice Miller continues its commitment to help clients build, grow, and protect their interests. More at icemiller.com.